Thrown off balance, Sarah struggled to hold on, though her hands were slippery from sweat and blood. With a gasp, she felt her grip fail, and she dropped, sucking in deeply, but the Roni slammed her like an icy hammer, driving air from her startled lungs. Sarah floundered, battling first to reach the surface, then to tread water and sputter a few deep breaths, and finally to keep from getting tangled in all the ropes that lay strewn across the water. A shiny hook passed a frightening hand's width from her face. Moments later, she had to dive down to avoid a snarl of cords that might have trapped her. The boat's turbulent wake added to her troubles as the Haupua took advantage of its chance to flee. Her chest ached by the time she hit surface again, to come face to face with a lanky young man leaning on the rim of a coracle, clutching a slingshot in one hand. Surprise rocked him back when their eyes met. Then his gaze dropped to notice her bareness. He blushed. Hurriedly, the young man put aside his weapon and started shrugging out of his jacket. To give to her, no doubt.
"Thanks," Sarah gasped. "But I gotta go now."
Her last glimpse of the young villager as she swam away showed a crestfallen look of disappointment. "It's too soon yet for him to be a hardened pirate," Sarah thought. "This new hard world hasn't yet rubbed away the last traces of gallantry. But give it time." Now she had the river's current behind her as she swam, and soon Sarah glimpsed the Haupua downstream. The crew had the boat turned and were stroking to stay in place, now that they had reached a safe distance from Bing Village. Still, it was a hard pull to reach the hull at last and start up the rope ladder. She only made it halfway before her muscles started to cramp and the helpful sailors had to pull it in the rest of the way by hand. "I've got to get stronger if I'm going to make a habit of having adventures," she thought, as someone wrapped a blanket around her. Yet Sarah felt strangely fine while Pizora tended her wound, and the cook made her some of his special tea. Sarah's hand ached and her body throbbed, yet she felt also something akin to a glow. "I made decisions, and they were right ones. A year ago it seemed every choice I made was wrong. Now, maybe things have changed." Clutching her blanket, Sarah watched as the Haupua labored back upstream along the west bank, to a point where they could take aboard the stranded caravan, ferrying the urs and the beasts far enough to have no worries about local fanatics. The calm teamwork of passengers and crew was such an encouraging sight, it boosted her morale about big issues, almost as much as the brief fight had lifted something else inside her. "My faith in my own self," she thought. "I didn't think I was up to any of this, but maybe Father's right after all. I stayed in that damn treehouse long enough."
Asks. Shortly after Vubbin spoke, the portal reopened, and there emerged from the ship several more floating machines, growling disconcertingly. Each hesitated on reaching the onlookers lining the valley rim. For several duras, the folk of the commons held their ground, though trembling in foot, wheel, and ring. Then the robots turned and swept away toward every point of the compass, leaving cyclones of broken grass in their wake. "Survey probes! These shall commence their duties," the first messenger explained, buzzing and clicking primly in a formal version of Galactic 2. "Preliminary analyses these surrogates shall provide. Meanwhile, toward a goal of both profit and rescue, let us face-to-face discussions commence. This caused a stir. Did we understand correctly? Our dialects have drifted since our devolution. Did the phrase face-to-face mean what it seemed? Below, the ship's doorway began reopening once more. Bad news, Lester Campbell commented gruffly. If they're willing to let us see them in person, it means that they are not worried anyone will be left after they depart to tell whose face was seen, finished Knife Bright Insight. Our Hoon brother, Fu Hoondao, shared the gloomy diagnosis. His aged throat sac darkened from somber thought. Their confidence is blatant, unnerving, room, as is their haste. Vubbin turned an eye stalk toward my our sensor ring and winked the lid, an efficient human-derived gesture conveying irony. Among the six, we Treiki and Gekex hobble like cripples on this heavy world, while Hoon stride with graceful power. Yet those dour, pale giants claim to find the rest of us equally frantic and wild. Something, or rather two somethings, stirred within the shadowy airlock. A pair of bipedal forms stepped forward. Walkers, slim, stick-jointed, and somewhat tall, clothed in loosely draped garments that concealed all but their bare hands and heads, they emerged into the afternoon light to peer upward at us. From the commons there erupted a low collective sigh of shock and recognition. Was this a hopeful sign? Out of all the myriad space-faring races in the civilization of the five galaxies, what impossibly remote chance decreed that our discoverers might turn out to be cousins? That the crew of this ship should be co-genetic with one of our six? Was this the work of our capricious goddess, whose luck favors the anomalous and strange? Humans! Urja, our eldest sage, aspirated in Anglic, the native tongue of our youngest sept. From Lester Campbell there escaped a sound I had never heard before, which these rings could not decipher at the time. Only later did we comprehend and learn its name. It was despair.
Dwer. Reddy led a single file along a track that now ran atop a broad shelf of bedrock, too hard for Great Boo to take root. The slanting upthrust granite ledge separated two broad fingers of cane forest, which Dwer knew stretched for hundreds of arrow flights in all directions. Although the rocky trail followed a ridgetop, the boo on either side grew so tall
that only the highest peaks could be seen above the swaying ocean of giant stems. The girl kept peering, left and right, as if in search of something, as if she wanted something rather urgently and did not want to walk past it by mistake. But when Dwyer tried to inquire, all she gave back was silence. "You'll have to watch it with this one," he thought. "She's been hurt all her life till she's prickly as a dartback hare." People weren't his specialty, but a forester used his empathy to grasp the simple needs and savage thoughts of wild things. Wild things can know pain. "Well, in another day or so, she won't be my problem. The sages have experts, healers. If I meddle, I may just make things worse." The stone shelf gradually narrowed until the footpath traced a slender aisle between crowded ranks of towering adult bu, each stem now over 20 meters tall and as thick as several men. The giant green stalks grew so close that even Mudfoot would have trouble getting far into the thicket without squeezing between mighty boles. The strip of sky above pinched gradually tighter, becoming a mere ribbon of blue as the trail constricted. At some points, Dwyer could spread his arms and touch mighty cylinders on both sides at the same time. The compressed sight played tricks with perspective as he pictured two vast walls, primed to press together at any instant, grinding their tiny group like scraps of cloth under Nello's pulping hammer. Funny thing, this stretch of trail hadn't felt so nearly spooky on his way uphill 2 days ago. Then the slender avenue had felt like a funnel, channeling him briskly toward his quarry. Now it was a cramped furrow, a pit. Dwyer felt a growing tightness in his chest. What if something's happened up ahead? A landslide blocking the way, or a fire? What a trap this could be. He sniffed suspiciously, picking up only a gummy reek of greenness given off by the boo. Of course, anything at all could be going on downwind, and he wouldn't know of it until... "Stop this. Snap out of it. What's gotten into you?" "It's her," he realized. "You're feeling bad because she thinks you're a bastard." Dwyer shook his head. "Well, ain't it so? You let Reddy go on thinking she might be hanged when it would have been easy enough to say..." "To say what? A lie? I can't promise it won't happen. The law is fierce because it has to be. The sages can show mercy, it's allowed. But who am I to promise in their name?" He recalled his former master describing the last time a large band of Sooners was discovered, back when old Fallon had been an apprentice. The transgressors were found living on a distant archipelago, far to the north. One of the Hoon boat wanderers, whose job it was to patrol at sea, the same way human hunters roamed the forest and Urish plainsmen ranged the steppes, came upon a thronging cluster of her kind, dwelling amid ice floes, surviving by seeking the caves of hibernating raoul shamblers and spearing the rotund beasts as they slept. Each summer the renegade tribe would come ashore and set fires across the tundra plains, panicking herds of shaggy, long-toed galliders, sending the frightened ungulates tumbling over cliffs by the hundreds, so that a few might be butchered. Gayan, the boat wanderer, had been drawn by the smoke of one mass killing and soon began dealing with the crime in the manner of her folk, patient beyond human fathoming, gentle in a way that gave Dwyer nightmares to hear of it. She had taken an entire year to winnow the band one by one, painlessly confiscating from each member its precious life bone, until all that remained was a solitary male elder,
whom she seized and brought home to testify, ferrying the dejected captive in a boat piled high with the fifth vertebra of all his kin. After reciting his tale, a crooning lament lasting 14 days, that final sea-going sooner was executed by the Hoon themselves, expiating their shame. All the impounded vertebrae were ground to dust and scattered in a desert far from any standing water. The forbidding memory of that story filled Dwyer's heart with leaden worry. "Spare me, please, from being asked to do as Gaean did. I couldn't. Not if all the sages ordered it. Not if Lark said the fate of all Jijo hung in the balance. There's got to be a better way." Just where the rocky shelf seemed about to narrow down to nothing, letting the divided tracts of Boo converge and obliterate the trail, a clearing abruptly opened ahead. A bowl-shaped depression, nearly 1,000 meters across, with an algae-crusted lake in its center and a narrow outlet at the far end. A fringe of great Boo lined the crater's outer rim, and spindly tufts of the tenacious plant sprouted from crevices between jagged boulders that lay tumbled across the silent mountain vale. The lake's watery shore was outlined by a dense hedge, appearing at a distance like rank moss, from which radiated countless twisted tendrils, many of them broken stumps. Even where Dwyer stood, ropey fibers could be seen half buried in the dust, some as thick as his leg. The peaceful quiet was belied by an eerie sense of lifelessness. The dust lay undisturbed by footprints, only the scrape of wind and rain. From prior visits, Dwyer knew why prudent creatures avoided this place. Still, after the strangling confinement of that tunnel trail, it felt good to see sky again. Dwyer had never much shared the prevailing dread of crossing open ground, even if it meant walking for a short time under the glaring sun. As they picked their way past the first boulders, the glaiver began to mew nervously, creeping alongside Reddy to keep in her shadow. The girl's eyes roved avidly. She seemed not to notice drifting off the trail at an angle that would skirt the fringe of the lake. Dwyer took several long strides to catch up. "Not that way," he said, shaking his head.
"Why not? We're heading over there, right?"
She pointed to the only other gap in the outer wall of Boo, where a narrow, scummy stream leaked through the valley's outlet.
"Quickest way is past the lake. Looks easier, too, except right by the shore."
Dwyer gestured toward a relic webbery of dun strands, draping the nearby jagged boulders.
"Those are," he began. "I know what they are,"
she made a face.
"Booyer didn't only live on the slope, you know, even if you Westies do think it's simply the best place to be. We got mulk spiders over the hill, too, eating up old Booyer ruins. Anyway, what are you so scared of? You don't think this one's alive, do you?"
She kicked one of the desiccated vines, which crumbled to dust. Dwyer controlled himself. "It's that chip on her shoulder talking. Her people must have been awful to her." Taking a breath, he replied evenly, "I don't think it's alive. I know it is. What's more, this spider's crazy." Reddy's first reaction was to raise both eyebrows in surprised fascination. She leaned toward him and asked in a hushed voice,
"Really?"
Then she tittered, and Dwyer saw she was being sarcastic.
"What's it do? Put out sticky lures full of berry sugar and sweet gar to snatch little girls who were bad?"
Taken aback, Dwyer finally grunted,
"I guess you could say something like that."
Now Reddy's eyes widened for real, brimming with curiosity.
Now this I gotta see.
She gave the rope at her waist a sudden yank. The formidable-looking knot fell apart, and she took off, dashing past several craggy stones. The gaily squeaking Noor pursued with excited bounds.
Wait!
Dwer yelled futilely, knowing it was useless to chase her through the boulder maze. Scrambling up a nearby talus slope of rocky debris, he managed to glimpse her ragged ponytail, bobbing as she ran toward where the rocky slabs converged in a tumbled labyrinth rimming the lakeshore.
Ready!
He screamed into the wind.
Don't touch the...
He stopped wasting breath. The same breeze that pushed the lake's musty pungency against his face stole his words before they could reach her ears. Dwer slid back down the trail, only to realize, damn, even the glaiver was gone. He finally found it half an arrow flight uphill, shambling back the way they had come, following whatever instinct sometimes drove its kind to wander doggedly east, away from comfort and protection, and toward near-certain death. Growling under his breath, Dwer seized the mare's tether and sought something, anything, to tie her to. But the nearest stand of gangly boo lay too far away. Dropping his pack, he whipped out a length of cord. "Sorry about this," he apologized, using his hip to lever the glaiver over. Ignoring her rumbling complaint, he proceeded to hobble her rear legs, where he hoped she couldn't reach the rope with her teeth.
Pain, frustration, both quite tedious are.
Sorry, I'll be back soon, he answered optimistically, and took off after the sooner child.
Stay uphill and downwind, Dwer thought, angling to the right of her last heading. This just might be a trick to let her circle around and head for home.
A little later, he noticed he had reflexively unlimbered his bow, cranking the string tension for short range, and had loosed the clamp securing the stubby arrows in his thigh quiver.
What good will arrows do if she makes the spider angry? Or worse, if she catches its interest?
Toward the valley's rim, many stones retained a semblance of their ancient role, segments of whatever Buyer structure once stood proudly on this site. But as Dwer hurried inward, all likeness to masonry vanished. Ropey strands festooned the boulders. Most appeared quite dead, gray, desiccated, and flaking. However, soon his eye caught a greenish streak here, and over there a tendril oozing slime across a stony surface, helping nature slowly erase all vestiges of former scalpel-straight smoothness. Finally, raising a creepy feeling down his back, Dwer glimpsed tremors of movement, awakening of curling strands, roused from sleep by some recent disturbance. Ready. He dodged through the increasingly dense maze, leaping over some ropey barriers, sliding under others, and twice doubling back with an oath when he reached impassable dead ends. This Buyer site was nowhere near as vast as the one north and east of Dolo Village, where each local citizen dutifully took part in crews gleaning for items missed by the deconstructor spider. Dwer used to go there often, along with Lark or Sarah. That spider was more vigorous and alive than this crotchety old thing, yet far less dangerous. The thicket of pale cable soon grew too crowded for an adult to pass, though the girl Anur might have gone on. In frustration, Dwer whirled and slapped a rounded knob of rock.
Ifni Sluck!
He waved his stinging hand.
Of all the bloody damn jeeky!
He slung the bow over one shoulder, freeing both hands, and started scrambling up the jagged face of a boulder 3 times his height. It was no climb he would have chosen, given time to work out a better route, but Dwyer's racing heart urged him to hurry. Many avalanches of eroded rock spilled over his hair and down his collar, stinging with the dusty redolence of decayed time. Flaky vines and dried tendrils offered tempting handholds, which he strove to ignore. Rock was stronger, though not always as reliable as it looked. While his fingers traced one fine crack, he felt the outcrop under his left foot start to crumble and was forced to trust his weight to one of the nearby crisscrossing mulch cables. With a crackling ratchet, the vine gave but a moment's warning before slipping. He gasped, suspending his entire weight with just his fingertips. Dwyer's torso struck the stone wall, slamming air out of his lungs. His flailing legs met another strand, thinner than the first, just seconds before his grip would have failed. With no other choice, Dwyer used it as a springboard to pivot and launch himself leftward, landing on a slim ledge with his right foot. His hands swarmed along the almost sheer face, and at last found solid holds. Blinking away dust, he inhaled deeply till it felt safe to resume. The last few meters were less steep, but worn slick by countless storms since the boulder had been dragged here, then left in place by the weakening vines. Finally, he was able to get up on his knees and peer ahead toward the nearby shore. What had seemed a uniform hedge lining the lake's perimeter was now a thick snarl of vines, varying from man height to several times as tall. This near the water, the cable's gray pallor gave way to streaks of green, yellow, even blood red. Within the tangle, he glimpsed specks of yet other colors, sparkling in shafts of sunlight. Beyond the thorny barrier, the scummy pond seemed to possess a geometric essence, both liquid and uncannily corrugated. Some areas seemed to pulse, as if to a cryptic rhythm, or enduring anger. One of a kind, he thought, not really wanting to evoke the name, but unable to resist. He pulled his gaze away, scanning for Reddy. Don't hurt her, one of a kind. She's only a child. He didn't want to converse with the mulch spider. He hoped it might be dormant, as when the lake was a harmless cranny in the winter snowscape. Or perhaps it was dead at last. The spider was surely long past due to die. A grisly hobby seemed to be all that kept this one alive. He shivered as a creeping sensation climbed the nape of his neck.
Hunter, fellow seeker, lonely one, how good of you to greet me. I sensed you pass nearby some days ago, hurrying in chase. Why did you not pause to say hello? Have you found what you sought? Is it this child you speak of? Is she different from other humans? Is she special in some way?
Scanning for traces of Reddy, Dwyer tried to ignore the voice. He had no idea why he sometimes held conversations with a particular corrosive alpine puddle. Though Psi talent was unknown among the six, the scrolls warned darkly against it. Anyway, most Psi involved links among close kin. One reason he never told anyone about this Fey channel. Imagine the nicknames if people learned of it. I probably imagined it all anyway. Must be some weird symptom of my solitary life. The tickling presence returned.
Is that still your chief image of me, as a figment of your mind? If so, why not test it? Come to me, my unowned treasure, my unique wonder. Come to the one place in the cosmos where you will always be prized.
Dwyer grimaced, resisting the hypnotic draw of the algae patterns, still scanning amid the rocks and tangles for Reddy. At least the spider hadn't taken her yet. Or was it cruel enough to lie? There! Was that a flicker to the left? Dwyer peered westward, shading his eyes against the late afternoon sun. Something rustled near the coiled vines, just a dozen or so meters closer to the lake, hidden by the bulk of several stone slabs, but causing a section of hedge to quiver. Squinting, Dwyer wished he hadn't been so hasty in dropping his pack, which contained his priceless handmade ocular. It might be a trap, he thought.
Who would trap you, special one? You suspect me? Say you don't mean it.
The wind had died down a bit. Dwyer cupped his hands and called,
Ready!
Queer echoes scattered among the rocks to be sucked dry by pervasive moss and dust. Dwyer looked around for alternatives. He could slip down to ground level and hack his way inward using the machete sheathed at his back, but that would take forever, and how would one of a kind react to having its fingers sliced off? His only real option was to go over. Dwyer backed up until his heels hung over empty space, then took a deep breath and sprang forward. One, two, three paces, and leaped, sailing over a jungle of interlacing tendrils, to land with a jarring thud atop the next slab. This one slanted steeply, so there was no time to recover. He had to scramble fast to reach a long knife-edged ridge. Standing up, he spread his arms and gingerly walked heel to toe, teetering for 10 paces before reaching a boulder with a flatter top. Dwyer's nostrils filled with sour caustic odors from the lake. More nearby tendrils throbbed with veins now, flowing acrid tinctures. He skirted puddles of bitter fluid, collecting in cavities of etched stone. When his boot scraped one pool, it left fine trails of ash and a scent of burning leather. The next time he took a running leap, he landed hard on hands and knees.
Ready?
He called, crawling to the forward edge. The shoreline barrier was a dense woven knot of green, red, and yellow strands, twisting in roiling confusion. Within this contorted mass, Dwyer spied objects, each nestled in its own cavity, each sealed, embedded within a separate crystal cocoon. Golden things, silvery things, things gleaming like burnished copper or steel. Tubes, spheroids, and complex blocky forms, things shining unnatural hues of pigment or nano-dye. Some resembled items Dwyer had seen dragged from buoyer sites by reclaimer teams, only those had been decomposed, worn by passing centuries. These samples of past glory looked almost new, like bugs trapped in amber. Their cocoons preserved them against the elements, against time. And each item Dwyer knew was one of a kind. Not every sample was a buoyer relic. Some had once been alive. Small animals, insectoids, anything that strayed too close and caught the mad spider's collecting fancy. It seemed a wonder that a being devoted to destruction, one designed to emit raising fluids, could also secrete a substance that conserved, all the more astonishing that it would want to. The rustling resumed, coming from his left. Dwyer slithered that way, dreading to find the girl trapped and suffering, or else some small creature he would have to put out of misery with his bow. He edged forward,
and gasped. What he saw, netted in a profuse tangle, just a few meters ahead, came as a complete surprise. At first sight, it resembled a bird, a Geoan avian, but the typical clawed stilt for a landing leg, four broad feathered wings, and a tentacle tail. But Dwyer swiftly saw that it was no species he knew, or any genus listed on his brother's charts. Its wings flapping desperately against a surrounding net of sticky threads, articulated in ways Dwyer thought unnatural. And they beat with a power he found suspicious in any living thing that size. Feathers had been ripped or burned away in several places. Within those gaps, Dwyer glimpsed flashes of glistening metal. A machine! Shock made him release the screen on his thoughts, allowing the tickling voice to return.
Indeed, a machine of a type I never before owned. And see, it operates, it lives.
I see that all right, Dwyer muttered.
And you don't yet know the half of it. Is this my day or what?
Dwyer hated the way the Mulk spider not only slipped into his mind, but somehow used what it found there to produce perfect Anglic sentences, better than Dwyer could manage, since the spider never stammered or seemed at a loss for words. He found that obnoxious, coming from a being lacking a face to talk back to. The false bird thrashed in its snare. Along its feathered back gleamed clear, golden droplets that it fought to shake off, flicking most aside before they could harden into a shell of adamant, preserving crystal. What on Jijo could it be? Dwyer wondered.
I was hoping, now that I have you, to learn the answer.
Dwyer wasn't sure he liked the way one of a kind put that. Anyway, there wasn't time to bandy words. Dwyer pushed aside pity for the trapped creature. Right now, he must keep ready from becoming yet another unique specimen in the Mulk spider's collection.
So, as I suspected, the small human is special.
Dwyer quashed the voice with the best weapon he had, anger. Get out of my mind! It worked. The presence vanished, for now. Once more, Dwyer lifted his head and shouted,
Ready! Where are you?
An answer came at once from surprisingly close by.
I'm here, fool. Now be quiet or you'll scare it.
He swiveled, trying to stare in all directions at once.
Where? I don't see. Right below you, so shut up. I've been following this thing for weeks. Now I gotta figure out how to get it out of there.
Dwyer slid further left to peer into the crisscrossing network just below, and found himself staring straight into the beady black eyes of a grinning Noor, stretched out across a dormant vine as if it were a comfy roost. Mudfoot tilted his head slightly, squinting back at Dwyer. Then, without warning, the Noor let loose a sudden sneeze. Dwyer rocked back, cursing and wiping his face, while Mudfoot grinned innocently, happily.
Quiet, you two. I think I see how to get a little closer.
No, Reddy, you mustn't. Ignoring the Noor, Dwyer crept back to the edge and found her at last, close to the ground, perched with a leg on either side of a giant vine, squinting through the gloomy tangle at the mysterious avian.
Took you long enough to catch up,
Reddy commented.
I had some distractions, he replied.
Now just wait a second, will you? There's some things you ought to know about this here Mulk spider. He motioned at the snarled mesh surrounding them. It's more, well,
dangerous than you realize.
Hey, I've been exploring Webb since I was little, she replied. Most are dead, but we got a few big ones in the hills still full of sap and nasty stuff. I know my way around.
She swung her leg over the branch and slipped forward. In a panic, Dwyer blurted out, Did any of those spiders try to catch you? She stopped, turned to face him again, and smirked.
Is that what you meant by crazy? Oh, Hunter, you got some imagination.
Maybe you're right, he pondered. That could be why he never heard of anyone else holding conversations with shrubs and lakes.
What, again? How many times must we speak before you are convinced?
Shut up and let me think. The spider's presence backed off again. Dwyer bit his lip, trying to come up with something, anything, to keep the girl from venturing deeper into the thicket. Look, you've been following that bird machine for some time, right? Is that what led you west in the first place? She nodded.
One day some of the boys saw a critter swoop out of a marsh down by the rift. Mean old Jass winged it, but it got away, leaving a feather behind.
She plucked something out of her leather blouse. Dwyer glimpsed a brief metal sparkle before she put it away.
I swiped it from Jass before I snuck out to go after the bird. Poor thing must have been hurt, 'cause by the time I picked up the trail it wasn't flying so good, kind of gliding for a stretch, then hopping along. I only got one good look. Upslope to the rimmers, it started pulling ahead. Then I reached the slope, and it came to me that I risked getting hanged every dura that I stayed.
She shivered, a memory of fear.
I was about to give up and head back home for a beating when I heard a tapping sound in the night. I followed it, and for a minute I thought the clockteat was my bird.
She sighed.
That's when I saw you snoring away with that fancy bow of yours lying nearby. Figured it'd make Jass and Bomb happy enough to forget knocking my teeth out for running off.
Dwyer had never heard their names before, but decided a rope was too good for some Sooners. That's why you came all this way? To follow that bird thing? Reddy answered with a shrug.
I don't expect you to understand.
On the contrary, he thought, it was what he himself would have done, if something so strange ever crossed his path.
As would I, were I not rooted to this spot, ensnared by my own limitations. Are we not alike?
Dwyer chased the spider out, and the next instant an idea glimmered, offering a possible way out of this mess. As Reddy slid off the branch and began to sidle forward, holding a slim blade that Dwyer had never found when he searched her the day before. It gleamed with razor sharpness.
Wait, think about it, Reddy. Shouldn't we work together? Wouldn't we do a better job getting it out?
She stopped and seemed to consider the idea, looking up through the branches.
I'm listening.
Dwyer frowned, concentrating on getting the words right.
Look, nobody on the slope has seen an active Buoyer machine since, well, long before humans came to Jijo. This is important. I want to get that thing out of here as much as you do.
All of which was true, or would have been if his first concern weren't saving the girl's life and his own. Stall for time, Dwyer thought. There's only a midura of daylight left. Get her to retreat till tomorrow. Then you can drag her away by force if you have to.
Go on, Reddy said. You want to come down and chop with your big knife? I bet you'd splatter hacking at live vines. Lot of pain that way, if the sap goes spraying around.
Still, she seemed interested. Actually, I know a way that won't bruise a single branch, but might spread a hole big enough to get your bird thing out. We'd use some of the natural resources handy hereabouts.
Yeah?
She frowned. The only stuff around here is rock and dirt and... Her eyes lit.
Boo!
He nodded. We'll cut some young shoots, trim them tonight, and return in the morning with bridges and ladders to cross on top of the boulders, and enough pry bars to spread a path through all this. He waved at the surrounding thicket. Without spilling any acid or gunk on ourselves, we'll get your birdie thing out long before it's sealed in a crystal egg, and march right up to the sages with a surprise that'll make a hoon's spine pop. How does that sound?
Dwyer saw distrust in her eyes. She was naturally suspicious, and he had never been a very good liar. When she glanced back at the trapped mystery machine, he knew she must be gauging whether it could hold out overnight.
"It still looks strong," he told her. "If it lasted in there several days, one more night shouldn't make that much difference."
Reddy lowered her head, pondering.
"Might even be good if its wings got stickier. Wouldn't be able to fly off when we free it."
She nodded.
"All right, let's go cut us some boo."
With one hesitant, longing scan behind her, Reddy swung her legs over the thick branch and reached up to begin climbing. She carefully examined each hand or foothold before committing herself, eyeing it for caustic leaks, then testing whether the next vine would bear her weight. Clearly she was an experienced explorer. But Reddy had never ventured through a spider like this one. When she was about a third of the way through the twisty tangle, she suddenly winced, withdrawing her hand and staring at a single pale golden droplet glistening on the back of her wrist. It did not burn, or she would have screamed. For a moment she seemed more entranced by the color than afraid.
"Quick, shake it off!" Dwyer cried.
She complied. The glob flew into the foliage. But instantly there followed two more soft, splatting sounds. A drop appeared on her shoulder and one in her hair. Reddy looked up to see where they came from and took one more in the middle of her forehead. Cursing, she tried wiping it off, but managed only to smear it down her cheek. Reddy backed away rapidly.
"Not that way,"
Dwyer urged. He saw some active vine snake toward her, golden dew oozing from crevices. Reddy hissed in dismay, taking more drops in her hair as she scrambled in a new direction.
"Tell her not to fight. There need be no pain."
Dwyer's angry snarl was voiceless, inarticulate, hurling the spider's mind touch away. He shrugged the bow off his shoulder, leaving it atop the boulder, and began clambering down to the girl. Vaguely, he was aware that the Noor had departed, sensibly fleeing danger. "Unlike some fools I know," Dwyer thought, slipping the machete out of its sheath.
"I'm coming, Reddy," he said, testing his weight on a branch.
Dwyer saw Reddy try to ascend by another route, easily evading the sluggishly pursuing vines.
"Don't bother," she called. "I'm all right. I don't need your help."
Ah!
The branch she was holding, which had seemed inert moments before, suddenly beaded the line of golden moisture. Reddy recoiled, cursing. Several drops adhered to her hand.
"Don't rub them," Dwyer urged.
"I'm not an idiot,"
she retorted, backing away. Unfortunately, that took her deeper into the morass. Dwyer's machete, an artfully reshaped length of buoyer metal, gleamed as he took a swipe at one of the vines between them. It looked lifeless, but he was ready to leap back in case. It severed neatly, a crumbling, decaying tube, spilling nothing but cloying dust. A good thing he had decided against using it as a foothold, then. This place wasn't forgiving of mistakes. He let the machete hang by the pommel loop while he lowered himself one level
to what seemed a stable vine, setting his weight down gingerly. Then he sidled along the horizontal span, seeking a way downward. The next foothold seemed thinner, less anchored, but he didn't have much choice. At least it didn't gush acid or try to wrap his ankle like a snake. How did she get this far in the first place? He wondered, glad that most of the tendrils were dead. The hedge would have been impassable when the mulk spider was in its prime.
Dwer!
He swiveled, wobbling as the ropey strand rocked to and fro. Peering past shadows, he watched Reddy climb a chimney-like funnel, offering what seemed a way out. Only now, halfway up the slim gap, she saw something begin twisting into place above. Another clump of living vines, moving in to block the promise of escape. Meanwhile, the chimney's base was closing the same way. Her face betrayed rising panic. Flushed, she held out her slim blade, eyes darting for some vital spot to stab her foe. But all she could do was saw at some nearby strand, hoping it would not gush vitriol or golden death. A short way beyond, Dwer saw the bird thing, still struggling within its own trap. Let her go, one of a kind, Dwer thought as he crouched, then leaped with both hands outstretched for another cable, which fortunately held as he swung across a dark opening to land straddling another almost horizontal branch, as thick as a sapling's trunk. Let her go, or I'll... His mind seemed to strangle on the demand, not knowing how one intimidated a mulk spider. Could he do more than irritate it with a machete? He might threaten to depart and return with tools to destroy the ancient thing, with flame and explosives. But somehow Dwer knew that would seem too abstract. The spider appeared to have little sense of perspective or cause and effect, only immediacy and avarice, combined with enough patience to make a hoon seem like a cranky newer. Anyway, by the time Dwer could carry out his retribution, Reddy would be sealed in a golden cocoon, preserved for all time, and dead as a stone. Let's talk a trade, one of a kind, he projected as he took up the machete once more. What will you take in exchange for her? There was no answer. Either one of a kind was too busy pushing vines and fluids around, acting with unaccustomed haste, or else... The spider's silence felt eerie, predatory, smug, as if it felt no need for conversation when it had two treasures and seemed about to get a third. Grimacing, Dwer sidled deeper into the quagmire. What else could he do? He hacked at three more vines. The last sent streams of caustic sap arcing between crisscrossing branches. Smoke curled up from the rubbish-strewn floor below, adding to the acrid stench.
Dwer, help me!
Reddy was fully hemmed in now, and touchy pride no longer suppressed the normal panic of a frightened child. Seen through a matrix of ensnaring mulk twine, her hair glistened like an Irish tinker's mane on a dewy morning, coated with a fine dusting of golden droplets. A vine parted under her sawing knife, and two more slithered in to take its place.
"I'm coming,"
he promised, splitting two more cables, then dropping to the next stable-looking branch. It sagged, then Dwer's footing went slippery as it seeped a clearish, greasy liquor. He shouted, and his feet slid out from under him. The same dense tangle he'd been cursing saved him from a broken neck. His windmilling arms caught a vine, wrapping round it desperately as his legs swung in midair. But his sigh of relief turned into a gagging gasp. Under his chin, livid veins pulsed with some vile crimson solution. Blisters formed as corrosive liquid welled beneath the thinnest of membranes. Dwyer's eyes stung from escaping vapor.
"No, no, don't think I would ever harm you so. You are much too precious for that."
Before Dwyer's tear-blurred gaze, the blisters stopped rising. Then reddish fluid seemed to drain out of the throbbing arteries.
"That nectar is for plain stone. For you, my unique one, only the gold."
Dwyer grimaced. "Thanks a lot." Peering to one side, he found another tangle within reach of his feet. Risking that perch, he pushed away from the loathsome branch that had broken his fall.
"Think nothing of it."
Dwyer was almost at Reddy's level now, close enough to see grim determination replace panic in her eyes as she sawed another vine in half. A fine spray rewarded her, gilding the forearm she raised to protect her face. All of a sudden, Dwyer realized she's cutting in the wrong direction. Instead of taking the most direct route toward daylight, she was heading deeper into the morass, toward the mechanical bird thing. Of all the times to chase an ifny slucking obsession. Sudden liquid coolness brushed Dwyer's wrist. A shimmering meniscus bead lay amid the dark hairs. He moved aside quickly before another drop could fall from the seep pore overhead. Dwyer shook the droplet off, but even after it was gone, the spot still felt chilled, touched with a not unpleasant numbness, like when the village dentist spread powdered neural leaves along a patient's gums before spinning his hand-cranked drill. The machete now wore its own streaked coating, already starting to crystallize in places. Certainly it was an artifact worth collecting, a slab of star god stuff adapted by a tribe of primitives to new use in a twilight place between the gritty earth and urbane sky. Grimly he raised his weapon and set to with a will. Concentration was vital, so he ignored the stench and grinding dust with a hunter's narrow-minded focus. Sweat beaded his brow, face, and neck, but he dared not wipe. No doubt he already looked like Reddy, who now glittered like some fairy confection, dusted with beads of honey. Dwyer did not bother shouting for her to turn and head toward him. Given her obstinacy, he might as well save his breath. Glancing back, he saw his escape route still looked clear, a tunnel lined by chopped branches and dangling severed vines. One of a kind could marshal more, but the mulch spider was old, slow. As Dwyer neared Reddy's cage, he felt sure he could thwart the spider's move when it came. Now he called hoarsely,
"Okay, Reddy, no fooling. Let's get out of here."
The girl was over at the far end of her funnel opening, staring at the bird thing past the branches that blocked her way.
"Hey, it noticed me. It's turning around."
Dwyer wouldn't care if it stood on its head and gave Drake's farewell address in Booyer-accented Galactic 3. He sliced another cable and coughed as fumes flowed from both writhing ends.
"Ready, we haven't got time."
When the smoke cleared, he sidled closer and saw that the bird thing had risen up within its cell, peering skyward and ignoring droplets that settled mist-like on its feathered back. Reddy, too, seemed to notice its attention shift. She turned to look upward as Dwyer heard a shrill chittering sound from the same general direction.
"It's just the bloody newer."
Beyond the diffracting crisscross of vines, he saw Mudfoot return from wherever it had fled. Only now the creature stood on its hind legs, sinuous body upraised, whiskered snout pulled back, snarling at something out of sight to the south. Another flicker caught Dwyer's eye, like an epileptic snake A kinked vine twisted into view, crossing part of the opening Dwyer had cut through the hedge. Its jerky fits and starts seemed pathetic, all alone. But that tendril was followed by another, and another still. "Ready?" he shouted, preparing to slash at the remaining barrier between them. "The trap's closing. It's now or never." On her face lay the frustration of coming within arm's reach of her grail, only to have it snatched away by cruel fate. Not waiting for her answer, he lifted the heavy machete with both weary arms and cried out, splitting with three hard strokes the heavy cable blocking his way forward.
"Don't throw it away, Reddy," he pleaded inside, knowing it would do no good to say anything more aloud. With a cry of frustration, Reddy whirled around, forsaking her treasure, hurling herself at smaller vines with her tiny blade, then squeezing between others with a lithe, squirmy agility. The tight passage smeared gold drops until she resembled a streaked pastry of swirled nut cream. Dwyer sliced relentlessly and at last was close enough to stretch one arm into the morass. Reddy's hand clasped his wrist. Dwyer planted his feet and hauled backward, drawing her through a dark, fetid tunnel. A low moan accompanied the passage. He could not tell if it came from her or himself, or both of them at once. She slid free at last and clung to him with sudden fury, wrapping his torso in quivering arms and legs. Underneath all her macho bravado, Dwyer knew she must have been terrified in there. "We've got to hurry," he said, tugging at one arm. Reddy resisted but a moment, then slithered off. She inhaled.
"Okay, let's go."
He gave her a boost with his hands, sending her clambering into the tunnel chimney he had carved through the hedge.
"Oh, going so soon? Have I been so poor a host?"
"Dry up and burn, one of a kind," Dwyer muttered under ragged breaths as he climbed after Reddy, trusting her strong instincts to lead the way.
"Some day I surely will, but by then I'll have preserved a legacy. Think on it. When Gijo's fallow age ends and new tenants possess this world for an eon of shining glory, they will gaze in wonder at this collection I've gathered. Amid their glittering city towers, they'll cherish my samplings of the interregnum, setting my prize pieces on pedestals for all to see. And paramount among those specimens will be you, my trophy, my treasure, perhaps the best conserved exemplar of your by then long extinct wolfling race."
Dwyer puzzled. How did the spider sink hooks into his brain to draw forth words he didn't recall ever learning, like exemplar and interregnum? Lark might have used them in his presence sometime, when perhaps they lodged somewhere deep in his memory. "You're the one who's going to be extinct, spider. You and your whole damn race." This time his blistering reply did not shove away the entity's mind touch.
"By then, certainly. But our type design is always to be found in the great galactic library, and we are far too useful ever to be forgotten. Whenever a world must be evacuated, tidied up, and allowed to lay fallow once more, whenever the mighty works of some former tenant race must be rubbed down to recycled dust, then we shall always rise again. Can your tribe of ignorant monkeys claim such usefulness, my precious? Can you claim any purpose at all, save a tenacious will to keep on existing?
This time Dwyer did not answer. He needed to conserve his strength. If the earlier descent had been awful, ascending became pure hell. It was twice as hard craning backward to hack away at vines overhead as it had been striking down. In addition to danger from whipping cables and spurting acid, he and Reddy had to climb through a mist of shimmering drops. It was no longer a matter of shaking them off one by one, but of dodging the thicker drifts and somehow preventing them from adhering to their eyes, noses, and ears. Through that luminous miasma, Dwyer saw more creepers twist and flop into a gathering mesh above, more quickly than he would have believed possible. Clearly, one of a kind had been holding back till now.
"What did you expect? That I would show you all the things that I am capable of? That I would show you all the... that I would show..."
When the voice in Dwyer's head trailed off, his first reaction was relief. He had other worries, like an agonizing crick in his neck and a right arm that looked as if it had been dipped in a jeweler's vat, and that seemed about to cramp from the repetitive hacking, hacking, hacking. Now if only the chattering Noor would shut up, too, with its shrill keening. Mudfoot's piercing chitters crescendoed, rising in pitch beyond the limit of Dwyer's direct hearing, but not past ability to scrape a vexing runnel under his skull. Through it all, a nagging worry bothered Dwyer. "I left the Glaver all tied up. Will she die of thirst if I never make it back?"
"Left!"
Reddy shouted. He quickly obeyed, swinging as far as possible, trusting her swift reflexes to warn of jets of yellow sap.
"Okay, clear," she called.
The machete slipped. Dwyer fumbled at the wrist strap three times before getting a grip to resume chopping the slender vines filling the chimney overhead, cutting off the swiftly failing twilight. If they didn't make it out by full nightfall, every advantage would belong to the crazy mulk spider. Now, a sound he had dismissed as background noise grew too loud to ignore. A low, rumbling counter-bass overrode the Noor's yapping. All around Reddy and Dwyer, the hedge began vibrating. A number of brittle vines shuddered to dust, while others sprouted cracks and dripped fluids, red, orange and milky, noxious additions to a fog that already stung human eyes. Through that blur, Dwyer blinked upward to see Mudfoot, perched nimbly atop the hedge of vines, withdrawing in snarling defiance as something new entered view from the south, something that hovered in the air without any visible means of support. A machine! A symmetrical, slab-sided form with gleaming flanks that reflected the sunset, drifting to a point just above the shuddering hedge. Suddenly its belly blazed forth a bitter light that diffracted past the vines. The slender beam lanced right past Reddy and Dwyer as if probing for something deeper.
"It's hunting the bird!"
Reddy crouched beside Dwyer, seized his arm and pointing. "Never mind the damn bird," he cursed. The hedge was shaking worse than ever. Dwyer dragged her behind him, just as a sundered tube whipped past, spurting caustic fluid, splattering a trail of fizzing agony along his back as he shielded the girl. Purple spots swarmed across his field of vision, and the machete slipped its thong to fall clattering off branches on its way down. Now it seemed as if the hedge were alive with stark fleeing shadows, as the floating machine's searchlight narrowed to a searing needle that scorched anything it touched. By the same light, door glimpsed the bird thing trapped inside its cage of ropey mesh and coated with a golden patina, erupting now in a dance of evasion, leaping back and forth as it tried to dodge the burning ray of light, its feathers already smoldering in spots. Reddy let out a throaty cry of anger, but it was all the two humans could do simply to hold on. Finally, the bird thing seemed to give up. It stopped ducking and instead spread its four wings in a pitiful effort to create a shielding canopy, which began to smoke as the blazing shaft struck home and stayed. Only the little bird machine's head poked out, snaking upward to gape toward the aggressor with one open, staring